Have you ever felt judged or pressured into a certain birth plan that didn't feel right for you? In this episode of the Golden Hour Birth Podcast, Rachel shares her inspiring journey advocating for the birth she wanted after two previous C-sections. She asks the powerful question, why should any woman have to fight so hard for autonomy over her own body and birthing choices? Listen in as Rachel details her perseverance seeking a VBAC-friendly provider and hospital despite discouragement and the incredible feeling of empowerment from achieving the redemptive birth she desired. Her story will make you consider, how can we better support women making informed decisions about their births, free from stigma and judgment?
Hey there, incredible listeners. Before we dive into Rachel's story, I want to take a moment to talk about something really special. Ergo Baby.
Motherhood isn't just about the baby. It's about you, the woman bringing life into this world. And when you're doing something that important, a lot of it comes down to feeling confident about being a good mom.
And that's where Ergo Baby steps in. Instead of creating things to add a long list of baby things, Ergo Baby makes products for the mothers who are using them. The sensation of holding a newborn baby for the first time, bundling baby up into their crib for the night ahead, that first visit to the in-laws.
With Ergo Baby, it's not just about functionality. Using their products make you feel like the amazing, caring mom you are. From baby carriers to high chairs, each Ergo Baby product is designed to embrace your nurturing side and enhance your motherhood journey.
What I love most about Ergo Baby is their products are more than just items. They're a reminder that you're doing an incredible job.
So, to all the women out there listening, if you're looking for products that resonate with your nurturing spirit, check out Ergo Baby, because motherhood is about you, too.
All right, let's dive into today's story. Get ready to be inspired, empowered, and reminded that you're never alone in this journey.
The Golden Hour Birth Podcast, a podcast about real birth stories and creating connections through our shared experiences.
Childbirth isn't just about the child. It's about the person who gave birth, their lives, their wisdom, and their empowerment.
We're Liz.
And Natalie.
The Golden Hour Birth Podcast, and we're here to laugh with you,
cry with you,
and hold space for you.
Welcome to the Golden Hour Birth Podcast. I am your co-host, Liz.
I'm your co-host, Natalie, and tonight we have Rachel from New York joining us. Thanks so much for coming on tonight, Rachel.
Thank you for having me, ladies. It's my pleasure.
So if you want to tell listeners about you and your family, I did what I say. Liz and Rachel met at Vivo Mia doula training.
Yeah. Yes.
I love that we're having you on as a fellow doula.
I'm so excited to be here.
So if you want to go ahead and tell the listeners about you and your family.
Sure. So my name is Rachel Maurice. I am a wife and I have three amazing high energy boys, 11, 8, and soon to be 2. I am a maternal health junkie. I love all things maternal health. I always have. But for me, just going through my birth experience really led me to this point. It was just like a buildup, a slow burn from my first birth experience up until my last one, where I really realized like, this is my niche, like this is my happy place. And I want to do all things, pertaining to maternal health.
I love that. Feel that too. You want to share a little bit about when you and your partner found out you were pregnant with your first and what that pregnancy was like?
Sure. So my husband and I, when I found out when I was pregnant with my first son, you know, pretty textbook pregnancy. I didn't have any complications. Everything went well. Admittedly, I didn't really know much about birth or pregnancy. I kind of was one of those go with the flow, whatever my doctor said is what it was. And pregnancy was great. You know, I felt great. I worked up until I think 2 weeks before I went into labor. And then when I went on maternity leave, I just remember, oh, I should walk. You know, they say that's good for, you know, getting your body ready. So I remember walking every day on the track. And my water broke really early in the morning, a day before my due date, actually. And I freaked out. It was like, all I can remember thinking to myself is, I don't know much, but I know I don't want to have a C-section, right? So here I am. It's like 5 in the morning. my water breaks. I call my provider. He's like, you know, just come to the hospital. I call my husband. He was getting off of a night shift. So he's like, I'm leaving work. I'll meet you at the hospital. My mother drove me to the hospital and I found out I was only like 1 centimeter dilated. Like I hadn't even reached far. So immediately, you know, they get me situated. I'm admitted and they start offering me like an epidural. I probably was in the hospital for all of 45 minutes and they're like, oh, are you feeling pain? And I was like, yeah, I'm feeling cramps. You know, they weren't, in hindsight, again, they weren't bad. But again, the fear, just I'm having this baby. This is my first baby. I'm like, you know, they're significant. And then I started vomiting through these contractions. So she's like, let's get you situated. Let's get you the epidural. They get me the epidural. But then they also saw that my blood pressure was dropping. So now they're giving me things because my blood pressure is going too low. And within like, I would say a 3-hour time span, I just received so many interventions, but I don't remember being told what these interventions are or what the risks were, or for me to even make a decision. It was like, you know what? We're going to offer you this. Okay. We're going to give you that. Okay. And so that pretty much was the beginning of that labor experience. Obviously, with me getting the epidural, I'm now bedridden. I wasn't able to ambulate during that labor. And after about 12, 13 hours, my labor stalled. I had only reached about 3 centimeters and I developed a fever. Once I developed the fever and I had no clue, I was kind of in and out. I was so drowsy. I just remember my provider coming into the room and saying, he's like hovering over me. And I'm like, it felt like a dream because like I could see him, but it was like hazy. And he's just like, all right, Rachel, we're going to take you into the OR, okay? Because we just gave you some medication. Your fever hasn't gone down. Mind you, I had no clue I even had a fever to begin with. And he's like, but we have to take you in. And I hear my mother in the background saying, she's okay, right? She's okay. She's going to be fine. She's going to be fine. He's like, she's going to be fine, but we have to take her into the OR now. My fever at that point was about 104. So they rushed me into the OR. I just remember crying because at that point, it was just like, what's happening? And the nurse who prepped me, she just rubbed my back and she was like, I'm so sorry, but you're going to be okay. They got me ready for my C-section. And it just felt surreal because, again, I just felt like all these things were being done to me, but no one was really addressing me and the whole situation. And my husband, of course, he was nervous, but he couldn't let me know that he was nervous. And then at one point during my C-section, I remember saying, I can't breathe. And the anesthesiologist was just very like nonchalant, like, oh, you'll be fine. He threw an oxygen mask on. And my husband actually took a picture because I had a tear like falling down my cheek. And he was like, in that moment, he got so scared because he was not sure what was going to happen. Like, I was like gasping and no one was really attending to me. And that was at the moment that they were pulling my son out. So he was like, here I am watching you like gasping for air. And at the same time, our first son is being born. And I just was so confused. Like, I didn't know what to like prioritize. So needless to say, very traumatic. I didn't get skin to skin. I didn't get to hold my baby. I was kind of rolled into recovery by myself for an hour. And I harbored so much like guilt and shame from that birth experience that I didn't even realize I was holding on to. Like, I didn't feel that innate bond with my first son. I felt like I failed. And I couldn't really express that to anyone at the time. Like, I was just holding it in. And that first 2 to 3 months after giving birth was really hard on me because I now am dealing with a baby that's like colicky and like I'm dealing with my own feelings and the healing from a C-section. And, you know, we were admitted for 5 days because we both were on antibiotics because of the infection that they found out from my placenta from being checked too many times. I had too many cervical checks. And again, the cascade of interventions that I had no clue about with that first birth experience. Fast forward with my second son, it was pretty textbook, you know, oh, you had a C-section, you're going to have another C-section. I remember asking once, I didn't know of a VBAC. I didn't know a lot, but I asked if I could have one. No, you're not a good candidate. You're probably one of those women that would have died in childbirth, you know, failure to progress. That's what I was told. And you know, you had you were failing to progress. Don't worry about it. Just have a C-section. It's just easier. You have nothing to prove. And I listened. I kind of was just like, okay, that's what it is. So that's what I'm going to do.
Nothing to prove.
You have nothing to prove. You've had nothing to prove. You're fine. Just have another C-section. And so there pretty much was no conversation. It was, you're going to have a C-section. You're going to schedule it. And I grieved. I cried. I felt like a failure. And I just couldn't express it. None of my friends had C-sections at this point. I was like a unicorn, and I'm watching everyone have these amazing birth experiences. And again, like, it's not that the C-section is bad, right? Like, we understand that there are situations where they're absolutely necessary, but I was being told what to do. I wasn't given an opportunity to make a choice. And I'm also navigating things that happened that could have gone differently. But again, my lack of education at that time kind of steered things a certain way. And so fast forward, I have my second son. That C-section went well, was better than the first. I recovered. My biggest issue was navigating having a toddler and recovering from a C-section, but, you know, no complications or anything like that. And then I decided to go back to school for my master's in health administration. And my capstone project was focused on Black women at C-section rates. And so we know that when it comes to maternal health, Black women have the worst outcomes across all ethnic groups. And I just, in that moment, as I'm like learning all these things about the healthcare disparities and then focusing on C-sections. And at the time, the C-section rates for Black women were around 35%. For white women, they're around 30%. The World Health Organization recommends them to be 10 to 15. So in the US, over 30% of births are C-sections. And I'm like, hello. And they're not even medically necessary. Like, what's happening here? Like, why aren't we talking about this? And so here I am figuring this out. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to advocate for something to change. Like, it was in that moment that I'm like, this is it. This cannot be. And not too long after I graduated, actually a week after I graduated, we entered into a lockdown pandemic. So I graduated on March 7th. March 13th, the world shut down. And I was like, okay, well, there goes me getting on my soapbox and telling the world, hey, we have to change maternal health. And then during the tail end of the pandemic, I found out I was pregnant. And now I'm like, I can't unknow what I know. Like, I have all this information. I felt so empowered. I'm like, wow, like, I was told this. Like, this was the exact same script that was told to me. And so I went in, same provider with the first two, and I said, hey, you know, I want a TOLAC, a trial of labor after cesarean. And he was like, no. And I said, excuse me. He's like, you're not a good candidate. And I said, well, you said the same thing to me after I had when I was pregnant with my second son, but there are so many things that have changed. And I'm like, well, why? And he was like, well, admittedly, I don't know what current research shows, but I trust my skill set as a surgeon. I will never forget that conversation because that was it for me. You're my OB and you're telling me you trust your skill set as a surgeon? That, I'm not a zipper. Like, we're not, like, what? So right there, I said, okay. I know that it wasn't a conversation worth fighting over. And in the past, like recalling other conversations we had had before they were even important to remember, you know, he always talked about VBACs and he was not a fan of them. He didn't understand why a woman would want to put herself through that. He just, you know, it's just not worth the risk and all that stuff and all the fear mongering. So I walked out of that doctor's office and I cried a river and I grieved the relationship that I thought I had because he was my provider for a really long time. And he is a great doctor. It's just I outgrew him. We were no longer on the same path. He was very traditional in his mindset and I was not. And so I walked out of there and I decided that I was going to have this VBAC after two C-sections. Here I am, this Black woman who's 36 years old at the time. And I'm already like, wow, Rach, this is really what you want to do. The obstacles are stacked against you. I mean, on paper, like, you are not a quote unquote good candidate. So I did my research. I found another provider. And, you know, I didn't want to go into there like leading with what I wanted. I just wanted to see what she would say. And she was just like, you know, tell me your history. What were your birth experiences like? I shared that with her. And she was like, well, you know, like, I don't even understand why you had the second C-section. And she just really empowered and encouraged me. She's like, let's see how things go. But everything looks great. You don't have any health conditions. I'm, you know, putting you on the track so that you can have a TOLAC. And that was that. So I'm like elated. I'm like, oh my gosh, she gets me. Everything was going great. I now decide to hire a doula. I'm doing all the things, prenatal yoga, all the holistic, like I'm like on top of it. And then when I got to be about like 21, 22 weeks, I had like a little health scare where I was just experiencing like a cramping like sensation. I got really nervous, called my provider. She was like, well, you know, my office is pretty busy. I don't think I can see you. If it gets bad, you need to go to the ER. So I ended up going to the ER after hours of just this going on. And I'm like, it doesn't make sense. Like, I don't know what this pain is. They did all these tests. They couldn't find anything. And again, she couldn't really give me any answers. I did my own research. And I believe that it was like C-section scar pain just from like my uterus stretching and just the old scars. But again, this was me doing my own research and everything that I read was in alignment with what I was feeling. So my next appointment, I go in there and I'm, you know, thinking that she's going to address this like, hey, how are you feeling? I know you called the office. She says nothing about my trip to the hospital. Her back is turned to me. And, you know, she's like, oh, how are you? And I'm talking. And she's like, oh, ha. And I see her like flipping through and she turns back around and she goes, so are you still trying for the VBAC? And I'm like totally thrown off because I'm like, wait, I am talking about like this trauma that I just experienced with the C-section scar pain. And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, okay, well, you know, don't gain any more weight because I wouldn't want to be able to like not be able to offer you a TOLAC. Now, ladies, at this point, I had only gained 9 pounds. Not that it even mattered, but let's just set it out. I had only gained 9 pounds. I'm about 24, 25 weeks. And here she is telling me, don't gain any more weight because I wouldn't want to not offer you a TOLA.
That's up to you. That's like up to your body and your baby. And oh my God.
And she's like, you know, because your age and, you know, as a Black woman and the VBAC calculator. And I'm just like, I'm being pumped. Like, there's no way. Like, this is really the narrative. Like, I'm like, this is what they talk about when they show racial disparities. Because the thing is, you're using something that studies have shown is not even accurate, number one. But you're not even looking at me as an individual person. Like you're literally standardizing my care. And all of a sudden, the whole conversation we had when I first started coming to you is out the window. Like now it's your position in the hospital and what you're trying to offer me. And like you said, as if it's you that's having this birth. And so I said, okay. I walked out the hospital. I called my doula. I was hysterical and my doula said, you know, I didn't want to, her words were, I didn't want to scare you. She was like, I don't want you to take this personal. I've had other clients that have had her as a provider. The weight thing is not personal to you. You're not overweight. There's nothing wrong with you. But she does tend to fear monger with weight, especially for her VBAC patients. So you have two options. If you want to stay with her, I will fight with you. I will advocate for you. That is your choice. But if you want to leave, you can leave. And I'm like, but I'm almost 30. Like I'm in my third trimester. I'm getting there. And she's like, and that's okay. She was like, the provider works for you. You can fire them. That was like, that was it. I said, you know what? You're right. I can. Why do I have to stay here? Like, why do I have to take you humiliating me and shaming me? When you have no, you're not in charge of what happens, like the course of this pregnancy or anything else. So back to square one, I stopped going to that provider and I did some research. My doula helped me look up a list of physicians that were VBAC friendly and had like, you know, great success rates with BBACs. I did some more research on hospitals because I wanted to make sure it was a marriage, like not just the provider being on board, that the facility was also one that had great VBAC rate. And, you know, one of the things that I can say is at that point, it dawned on me, like, this is the hardest thing I've ever done. I was so emotional. I'm like, I shouldn't have to go through this. This is unfair that I'm like going to court, having to prove my case, why I deserve to try, as if I don't have a whole bunch of other things that I should be worrying about, you know? But I also realized like the experience and the education that I had with each provider and everything I knew just kind of like fortified me to keep going. And so I finally found a third provider. I went in there like, listen, let's cut to the chase. This is what I've been through so far. This is what I want. This is what I won't tolerate. If this is going to be an issue, like all of a sudden it was like, you know what? Let's cut to the chase here. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm like 31 weeks pregnant. Are you on or are you not on? And so, you know, that provider, he was just like, those are not anything that I would ever have an issue with for my patients. And he was like, you're fine. And again, obviously I'm not God. I can't dictate like how it's going to progress, but I would not switch up on you. Like, we're going to go this and take it to the end. And he was true to his word. I, you know, being a woman of faith for me, like I just knew, like I knew that God was going to carry me through this pregnancy and this labor and delivery. And I trusted in that. And I had my VBAC after 2 C-sections. I was able to labor at home for a few hours. I remember telling my doula, I don't want my water to break, because that's what happened with my first son. And guess what? My water broke and I was hysterical. And she was like, look at me. It's not the same. It's going to be different. And I labored at home for maybe like 5 or 6 hours before I decided, you know what, I feel more comfortable going into the hospital at that point. And I went in and I thought I was like 5-6 centimeters long because my contractions were super close and super intense. And I was only a centimeter and a half. And I'm like, this is my stage. This is not happening. And, you know, again, when we talk about like birth being like a physiological process, that was it, because I left my comfort zone being home to go into a hospital. And the moment I walked in, the questions being triaged, like I think I started to get into my head and everything slowed down. The contractions even slowed down. And I did start to get nervous. Like, did I fight for all of this to get here and fail? Like, how is this going to pan out? But again, having my doula was everything, because she was in the trenches with me, like literally in the trenches. And every time I doubted myself, she was like, you're further than you were with your first. Remember you said you never knew what it felt like to go through this, like you're going through it. Remember when you said, and she just reminded me of my why. And I labored and labored and labored. And finally I said, I'm tired. I'm tired. Like, I feel like I'm fighting. And I decided to get an epidural after 15 hours of labor. I got the epidural. I got the Pitocin. And my body relaxed. I was able to sleep. And I woke up and I was at 5 centimeters. And then I was at 7. And then I was at 10. And it was like, I did it. Like, I really did it. And that was like the most amazing feeling in the world, because you don't realize how much you hold on to people's words and what they say about you and your body as a woman. And in that moment, I'm like, I'm not broken. Like, I remember saying that out loud, like, I'm not broken. And the release of that was just everything. And I'm like, how many women hold on to this pain and this fear of judgment because their birth didn't go as they assumed, whether it was a C-section or a vaginal birth, or, you know, a situation where maybe they wanted it to be unmedicated, but it was medicated, whatever it is, like, we let other people dictate what birth is going to look like for us and what they say about us. And I was holding on to a lot of that. And so for me, I always say my third birth experience was my redemptive birth, because I was able to let go of so much pain. And so I'm grateful. I still have moments where I think back and I'm like, wow, I really stood up for myself. And I'm so proud. I'm not having any more kids. But in that moment, I'm like, there is nothing that I can't do. Like, you cannot play in my face. Like, I advocated for myself. I did all the things and it worked out. So that's my story.
Well, I paid the number of your doula. I mean, like, I already love her.
I tell her this, like, I'm like, you're stuck with me. I just love you for life, because she was so encouraging. And she was actually the one that encouraged me. She was like, you know, everything that you did to prepare for this birth, she was like, we need you in this space. Like, you need to be a birth worker. We need more people like you. We need more Black women in this space. You having a VBAC after 2 C-sections. She's like, hello, you live in New York. This is litigation central. It is not easy to fight for that here on Long Island specifically. And she was like, and you did that unapologetically with like no questions asked. Like, you fought for it, and not that you should have to, but people need to know like it's possible. And so I said, okay, I'm going to be a doula, because she was that amazing. I'm like, if I could be anything like you, I'm going to go for it. And so I love her. Hannah is her name. Like, she is like the most amazing woman ever, like ever. I just adore her.
She sounds like it.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to group you in that story.
Cool. Thank you. She really is. She is. She's like, stop giving me the credit. I didn't push this baby out. I'm like, no, but I don't think I would have been able to continue if it wasn't for you. So she's amazing.
Did you find Bebo Mia?
So funny enough, a friend of mine sent me a link, and she was like, hey, you know, I came across this doula program. I thought of you. Because at that point, everyone was just like, you have to share your birth story. Tell me about your birth story. Like, it was crazy how much positivity I got after having my third son. And so, and me having different conversations and people saying, you know what, you should really become a doula. Like, I think you'd be amazing in this space. This particular friend, you know, reached out to me, and she's like, here's this link. There's a program that's about to start. And I think that they're doing some scholarships too. So look into it, see if it's something that you'd be into. And so, you know, I looked into it, and again, imposter syndrome, because I'm like, could I really be a doula? Like, I don't know. And I got kids, and when do I have time? And my husband was like, babe, you should totally do it. Like, you are obsessed with this. This is like the perfect thing for you to do right now. And so I looked into it. I actually applied for one of their scholarships, and I won. And so I got a partial scholarship, and he was like, that's it. That's the confirmation you needed. Like, they believe you, like they believe in you, go for it. And so that was it. It was just a friend just thinking of me and me actually applying. And that was the end of that, or the beginning of that, I should say. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that they do the scholarships and do so much for the community.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They really, really do. They really do. And I genuinely feel like it was like the perfect program for me. Where I was, because we got to interact with so many different people from all over the world. And it really wasn't a matter of like what you know already or like how educated you are in the like birth space. And I love that, because I really was like, should I be here? But it didn't feel like that. It really did feel like a loving community of people that were just trying to do the same thing. So pretty dope.
I love at the beginning of it, you session, they're like, where you are right now is where you're meant
to be. Yes.
And that, yeah, maybe.
Definitely, because there were moments where I'm like, oh, I'm falling upon your name, because life is life, and I just get to catch up, and I'm like, nope, where you are is exactly where you need to be. And I'm like, I received that. Yeah. It's intense, isn't it? Because it's like, you know, it's real life. And I think that's what people forget about, like being a doula or in that capacity, when you're ready, have your own kids and your own family. It's like, you want to honor showing up for the person you're supporting in the best way, but then like you have your own life going on. And it just really made me appreciate just like the value and worth of like what doulas really do. And I'm like, we do not give this enough credit, because to be on call for a client, to be in a hospital for you don't know how many hours, it could be short, it could be long, to do all the things throughout someone's like prenatal journey, all while you potentially have your own family. Like, my mind was blown. Like, wow, my doula really supported me. Like, she has 3 kids too. Like, she has a real, like, when I say real, like, she has a 9-to-5 brick and mortar job as well, in addition to being a doula. And I was like, and I never felt that from her. I never felt like a burden or that she was too busy. And I'm like, in that moment, as we're going through our doula training and then having the experience of supporting someone after, I'm like, no, we really need to like advocate for doulas to be covered by insurance and or that field to be highlighted so much more because, wow, it's intense. Yeah.
How are you melding or meshing your now doula training with what you study?
So it's funny because like initially I just didn't know how they were going to pair up. I'm like, my master's is in health administration, but I'm not in a hospital setting. I'm doing this doula training. Like, how is it going to work? I think I've just had opportunities to work with organizations that value my experience having the doula training because now they see the importance of doulas and how they can change outcomes. And so I actually had a meeting with a healthcare system that's based in New York, and they're looking to implement in their maternal health department something where there is doula support for patients, period. And in New York, they actually passed legislation to have doula support covered by Medicaid. So there's like small changes that are happening. And because I have like the healthcare background already in a hospital setting, I'm being asked to like enter into those spaces and offer my perspective on both sides. And so that is pretty interesting. And hopefully, you know, we can like break down some of the barriers because there are just so many things that do need to change in the healthcare space. But I don't even really think about it much. I just focus on just like honoring my patients the best way that I can, my clients rather, excuse me, because there's just so many different things that they come across. And I'm just like, wow, like we really are failing. Like we have to do so much better. Like the conversations that I hear, things that are being said, it just makes me really sad, right? Like it's just like we are this amazing country, and yet there's just like we're so behind in this space. Like we're just really, really behind. And I have friends who, you know, like a friend of mine, her husband is in the military and they're based in Germany right now. And her experiences, night and day. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, not me having like birth envy, just because like hearing what she's like, the opportunity, the resources that are afforded to her. I'm like, wow, that's beautiful. And I wish that, you know, everyone had access to that here. So yeah, like I'm just have these conversations and keep breaking down barriers, but it's tough.
Someone wanted to research, you know, if they were looking for a VBAC, how, like, what kind of research did you do on the doctors in the hospital?
So first I Googled, like, there is a website and the name fails me right now, but it's kind of like it grades. Healthcare report or something. I would have to fact check, but they pretty much give you like the grades of each hospital, right? And then you can look into specific departments and how these hospitals rate against other hospitals in the region. So I looked into that, and then like I would specifically Google like VBAC success rates in this hospital, providers that specialize in this. And from there, I would call offices and literally request a consultation, like before I even decide, because I don't think people think to do that. Like you go into a doctor's office thinking, oh, I'm making my first appointment with this provider. This is it. I literally took the posture on, no, I want to come in for a consultation. Like I want to sit down and talk to the provider first. I don't need you to touch me, poke me, do anything. I want to talk. I want to get a feel for your energy. I want to know, like when you're looking at me, like if what you're saying matches your body attitude. And that made a huge difference because I must have called 3 or 4 different, you know, women's clinics to like think about providers. And interestingly enough, like I didn't even realize with my third pregnancy that this was a thing, but there were so many providers that I was actually really excited about, but they worked in clinics where they rotated. So they may not be the provider that I got when I went into labor. And I was like, yeah, I'm not interested in that, you know? So I had to let those go. And So it was just really just me being really diligent about speaking to people, Googling, doing research, supplementing that with like evidence-based research, feedback links, and like other medically sound resources that show that VBACs are actually perfectly fine, even with two C-sections, like the rate or the risk of uterine rupture, the margin doesn't go up that much between one and two and all the criteria. And when I tell you, I felt like Doogie Howser, like I just became so obsessed with learning all the things so that when I went into these doctor's offices, like I could say, listen, so research shows. And once they heard me talking like that, they're like, oh, well, we can't really just read her this script because she actually knows the research. And so like education is everything, because the conversation changes so much when they realize that you're already coming into the conversation with like a foundation for what it is that you're asking for. And so that was everything. And then I also watched a ton of positive birth stories. I was on YouTube. I feel like whatever came out within a 3-year radius of me having my third son, I saw it. My husband probably was able to like recite VBAC stories in his sleep. My older kids were like, mommy, are you watching another VBAC birth story? And I'm like, yes. I was like obsessed with just, you know, immersing myself in that world because I didn't know anyone personally that had had a VBAC around me. So these became like my internet besties, just flooding myself with that positivity to know that like this is absolutely normal and, you know, it can happen. And that really helped tremendously. And it helped me formulate things to ask providers too. Like as I'm listening to other women share their experiences, I'm like, oh, I didn't even think about that. Like, okay, next appointment, I'm going to ask if this is something I can have when I go into labor, you know? So that was like really encouraging.
Yeah. It's so hard to stand up to your doctor and be like, well,
so hard.
What about this or whatever? Yeah.
Very. It's intense. I mean, I promise you, like talking about it, it sounds like, yeah, this was easy. And I went it. I cried before and after doctors. It was like, if you go to therapy and your therapist is like, okay, well, you know what? You're going to have to honor yourself and establish boundaries and do all these things. This is your homework for this week. And I felt tested every appointment. And it was draining because it really goes against my personality. Like, I'm such an easygoing person and I'm having to turn into like the big bad pulse for myself. And I'm like, this does not feel good. But at the same time, there was such a satisfaction knowing that like I'm standing up for me and my baby. And I believe that this is what's best for me and my baby. I could not stomach the idea of getting cut open a third time. I'm like, I'm not going through that recovery. And there's a risk of uterine rupture with each C-section as well. So I'm like, there's pros and cons across the board, but I'm like, I'm at risk anyway. And I'm like, I can't do that. I can't go through that recovery with two kids. And so I really had to like just get it together and put all of my like fears and like my people pleasing tendencies aside and show up and say, hey, this is what's going on. And of course, with my first provider, it was the hardest because like he was my OBGYN since I was 19. So this was like a long relationship. And I mean, hysterical. I'm like, And the funny thing is, he's actually my mother's GYN. So he would say to her, like, so how's Rachel doing? Does she have that VBAC? I can't believe she did that. That's so dangerous. Did you tell her? And my mother never shared any of this stuff with me.
Father?
To my mother. Until after I had to my mom. He's like, no, I don't know why she's doing this. Listen, you need to tell her. And I'm grateful. My mother never came to me with any of that until after I married. She was like, I am so proud of you. And honestly, this is what he was saying. And I'm like, thank you, Mom, for not sharing that with me, because I would have gotten in my head about that. But yeah, so this is just to show you. But yeah, I really like, it was intense. It was really hard. I mean, I tell people all the time, like, you have to really believe in yourself, because you're going to have so many people that are just going to discourage you. And honestly, you really shouldn't even share with everyone. Like, that was the other thing. I didn't tell a lot of people that I was trying to go for a VBAC. Like, I kind of kept it close to my core group of friends, because people are always going to look at you like, you're doing what? Why would you do that? It's giving like being on Instagram and reading through comments. And it's like, yeah, no, I'm not going to share this. I'm protecting my peace. And that was probably the best thing I did for myself that I didn't even know the importance of. Like, I just kind of just felt like this was the right thing to just don't tell people. And now I'm like, don't tell people, like, don't tell people what you're doing if it's something that's carrying that many obstacles. In addition to the fact that, like, I don't even believe in telling people your due date either. That's a whole other thing. Like, I just, oh, I'm doing the spring. Oh, I'm doing the end of this, you know.
But yeah, people are so invasive anyways. I can't tell you how many.
So invasive.
Like, oh, are you going to breastfeed? I'm like, why? Talking about my boobs. Like,
that part. How does that affect you? Right. And that's the thing. We don't honor people's autonomy when it comes to whatever it is they choose to do, whether you choose to breastfeed or not breastfeed, whether you decide that you're going to go for whatever it is. It's just like everyone has an opinion. Everyone has an opinion. Honestly, I didn't realize that like people were offended when someone shared that they wanted a natural birth or unmedicated birth until my client, like, because I would say that and people would be like, why does she want that? Like, what's wrong with pain medication? Nothing's wrong. Is that what you want? Go for it. Why are you mad at someone saying, I want an unmedicated birth? Like, it was crazy to me. I'm like, so you're really upset because she does not want to have medication? This is a bad place to be, guys. Like, it's really crazy. Oh my gosh. Right. Please, let's. Because I love whatever someone loves for themselves. I think that's just the most easiest, simple way to go about it. It's just like, if that's what you want for you, if you feel good about that decision, go for it. Go for it. If you want to have a home birth, go. Because that's another thing. Oh, God forbid you hear someone say, I want a home birth.
Oh, yeah. My girlfriend had a home birth. That's on you. Because I know. The fourth act. But I'm going to have a home for like,
you are.
And yes.
It's like, yeah, like, see.
Like, yeah.
That stuff, nobody understands it.
Nobody understands it. Why would you do that? We have hospitals. Okay, well, women were having home births before hospitals were like a thing. Yeah, people got really... It's a lot of like division when it comes to like birth choices. And again, that's one of the things that drove me to want to be a doula, because I'm just like, someone needs to know that their decisions are okay. You know what I mean? Like, when you have so many people who are not in any way equipped to give any kind of advice telling you, and sometimes it is your own family, you know, they mean well, but they're going off of something that was like trending 30, 40, 50 years ago. And that's not the case today. And so you're navigating all these different opinions and all this feedback, and you're just lost, and you're in your feelings, and you're hormonal, and you're pregnant. And it's just like, no, you need to be centered and have someone that you can trust, that, you know, totally unbiased, has your best interest at heart. And it really, again, it's a game changer. So I do have an Instagram page. It's still under construction, but it's at Doula Reach. And then people can reach me via email, rachel.julien, J-U-L-I-E-N, at gmail.com. I'm always checking my emails. I'm always checking my IG DMs. So, you know, I'm always open to questions and anything else that anyone needs. Because, again, I love this space. I love all things birth related. So, yeah.
We.
Yeah. I'm so glad we got to connect.
Yeah, me too. This is great. That's the number one advice I would tell people is do your research, educate yourself. Like, you have to go into it with some kind of knowledge of what you're seeking because again, someone will make those decisions for you otherwise. So
thank you for joining us on this episode of the Golden Hour Birth Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed our discussion and found it insightful and beneficial. Remember, the Golden Hour Birth Podcast is made possible by the support of listeners like you. If you appreciate the content we bring you each week, consider leaving us a review on your favorite podcast platform or sharing the show with your friends and family. Your support helps us reach more people and continue creating valuable episodes. If you have any questions, suggestions, or topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us on our website, www.goldenhourbirthpodcast.com. Or connect with us on social media. We value your feedback and want to make sure that we're delivering the content you want to hear. Before we sign off, we'd like to express our gratitude to our incredible guests who joined us today. We are honored that they trust us enough to be so open and vulnerable. We're grateful for their time and willingness to share their stories with us. If you're interested in taking the conversation further with us, join us on our Facebook group, the Golden Hour Birth Circle. We'll be back next week with another exciting episode, so be sure to tune in. Until then, stay golden and remember to take care of yourself. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Golden Hour Birth Podcast. Bye!